right, folks. So, welcome to the start of what is now the third season of Mentioned in Dispatches. I know Jim is particularly happy to hear that moniker again, having fought for it so hard for the first season there. So welcome, Jim. Howdy, howdy.
Hey, good evening.
And Vance is here. How you doing, Vance?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Hey, because if we're going to dive back into the GMT Scramble for Africa controversy one more time, we needed a Canadian on the phone. So we brought in Vance. The intent here is not to try and, you know, not just beat a dead horse, but dismember it and bury it in four corners of the globe. But we did want to return briefly to the GMT controversy, and then we're, I hope, going to be able to bury this and leave it gone for a long, long time, until the New York Times butchers another article about it. But Jim, you in particular had some fairly strong thoughts about this that you know, when listening to Matt and Rex talk about their viewpoints on it, had a couple of things that you did object to and a couple of things you were concerned with the way they were presented. And then Vance is going to politely apologize for dissenting with some of them as well. I'm not going to sit here and try and edit the clips together between what Matt and Rex said and then what we're saying here. But Jim, if there are particular things that you had concerns with the way they were expressed or what was being expressed, now's your chance. Get it off your chest. With carte blanche like that. Yeah, I know.
There's an entree. There's the entree we all want. One really ought to be very circumspect in going at anything like this, because I absolutely have no use for individuals who pursue things like this for nefarious means, you know, frankly, living out racist fantasies, living out whatever kind of weird repressed sexual fantasies they've got or whatever like that. If that's what you're here to do, I don't particularly have use for it. And let me go even farther than this, because I actually have a very strong feeling on one little piece of it, and that is that I'm a child of the state of Wisconsin, and as a child of the state of Wisconsin, I am very, very proud of the part that the various units of the Union played in the American Civil War. And I've studied that my whole life. I have never been a particularly good player of the Confederacy. I've never been overly fond of the Confederates generally. And I will tell you that I'm very, very, and I have long before any of this became an issue, I was opposed to public celebratory displays of the Confederate flag. It's where I am. That's my personal view. And I'll tell you why. Because flags mean things in the history of warfare, and when you surrender your flag, you don't get your flag anymore. And I have consistently said, long before this became a national issue, you want to display your flag? Good. Give it to me. I'm going to put it in a museum next to the other things we took from you when we beat your brains in between 1861 and 1865. So I don't have any truck with people who take this down into some weird historical cul-de-sac that I think is very destructive. When I first saw the article, though, in August of this year, and I actually read it on my way to my beloved battlefields when I was on my way over to Europe.
For what it's worth, for the listeners, just real quick, we're going to get to the battlefields on another episode.
And I read this article, and I was interested in it, of course, because here you have, you know, the newspaper of record, the Gray Lady, taking notice of our hobby. And I had read Rob Zachney's article that predated it, and I, of course, read that too. And he was making a very specific point about the Wehrmacht and all that other stuff. But along the way, I listened to the argument, I listened to the statements, and to refresh the memory very, very briefly, GMT Games proposes this game, Scramble for Africa, and it's very quickly withdrawn after a wall of criticism hits it, and the world then blew up after that as people screamed censorship and all this other stuff. My observations were as follows with respect to the podcast. I want to stress again, as I've said on this podcast before, that Scramble for Africa, you know, there's this dictum that lawyers use, that bad facts make bad laws. Well, bad games make bad opinion pieces. At no point was I slightly interested in what looked to be a lightly themed Euro about the, quote, scramble for Africa, end quote. I was never interested in this game. And there was nothing about it that said to me that you're special or good or better than, say, Source of the Nile or any, what's the other one I'm thinking of, Pax Britannica or any number of other games that have taken on the British colonial empire in, I think, a much more interesting way. So I was never particularly interested in the game. And then I saw some of the art they were talking about. I sent some of it to you, Brent, where it really came off as this very flip Flashman simulator. And I've always loved the Flashman novels for what they are, but it's like, are you serious? You're going to go at this topic from this weird, goofy vector? So I said, this was never, never a hill for the more traditional wargamers to die on. But then the conversation took a direction that I really started to wonder about and to think, wait a minute. You know, and the cases, and of course everybody wants to put the edge cases. Well, what are we going to have a game about King Leopold II in Belgium? You know, one of the real monsters of the 19th century. People wanted to say, are we going to have a Holocaust simulator and things like that? And of course they want to push these very, very hard cases. Well, first of all, let it be said, there really isn't one of those in any direct way. I suppose you can do it by some crude connection, but there really isn't such a thing. But there started to be this idea, and it was, and this is where my thing on the podcast, listening to it now, got me a little bit upset. And it was this idea that somebody has a corporate responsibility for curating these games, curating their narratives, and making sure that they only come out a certain way. And it was said exactly in this vague way, and it's always said in this vague way. And I am, among all the other things I am, pretty much a free speech absolutist. And whenever you tell me that it's going to be somebody's job to determine whether or not something is appropriate, offensive, inconsiderate, rude, not a, you know, whatever word you want to use, my first question out of my mouth is going to be, okay, who? It sure as heck shouldn't be me. Because I never want to be in that position as long as I live. I certainly never want it to be a government entity. And I work for the government. I'm proud to do so. But it should never be a government entity.
Well, so...
Are you telling...
So let me ask a question. I don't want to get you too derailed off your monologue here, but I'm a forum moderator.
Uh-huh.
Right? There's times I tell people to shut the hell up.
Yes.
And you know, I'm... probably pretty close to being as much of a free speech absolutist as you are, maybe not quite as far, but pretty damn close. And yet I have no problem reconciling the times I've had to tell somebody to shut up or give them a vacation or occasionally a permanent vacation for things that they said in an online forum.
But online forums are not public spaces.
Are they not?
No. You started a private group, which you let anybody join, but it's still not a public space. You own the website. You set the rules. In fact, there's a thing right at the top of our forums. It's rules and user guides.
Yeah.
You've laid out the rules. If you don't like the rules, don't come in.
So...
This is where I have a problem with, and it gets, you know, I know we're wildly going off topic here with free speech, but Facebook is a business, guys. They can censor anybody they like because it's theirs. They own it. It's not a free speech problem. It's a business. Yep. You walk into a restaurant and the restaurant owner doesn't like what you're saying in his restaurant, he's got every right as the business owner to kick you out. That has nothing to do with speech.
So does GMT have every right to say we don't want to publish this game because it's going to cost us business?
Correct.
Absolutely. You know, and that I think, actually, Vance, the only place you and I are going to disagree is that where you said this is a diversion. I don't think it is. I think it's the conversation. I think it's you know, when you say broad things like somebody should be doing something about this problem, I just want to know who you mean.
Yeah, that's wrong.
You know,
now,
like,
I'm thoroughly convinced that the GMT decision was totally business-based and not public pressure-based.
Correct.
Well, I think...
Who's never going to make them any money?
Well, I think the public pressure was going to impact the business. I don't think the public pressure was going to impact the core of GMT's business, which is us war game, hex encounter, chit kicking, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think we're the core business of them anymore.
Well,
there you go.
A lot more money.
You have arrived. This is, I have to call a stop because you have skipped ahead to the point.
Vance is overachieving again.
This is the company of Mystery Wizard.
Yes.
This is the company of Twilight Struggle, which I love. It's a good game.
Space Core.
Well,
this is Wonder Alley. Space Core.
Well, but I think Jim, here's where I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think they are yet, and I think that's part of the issue for GMT specifically. And again, look. This is now the second podcast, and Lord knows how much digital ink has been spilled over all of us that have nothing to do with actually running GMT other than we spend money on their games, trying to project what we think they're doing. But
you don't have to take my word for it.
Yeah.
Listening to Gene's interview with Harold Buchanan.
Yeah. No. I got you.
Two-part interview.
Yeah.
So clear where you're going.
So I think part of the issue here is GMT trying to figure out where they are going. And yes, Gene did put out there, this is a direction we want to go. And yeah, they're chasing some dollar signs because there's a whole lot more money to be made selling the 18th reprint of Twilight Struggle.
That's what business is due.
Yes. Oh, no, I get, well.
Otherwise, so, they're not very good at their job.
Well, not necessarily, though. And here's the example I'll use for you. And so, you know, look, as long as we're wandering off topic, let's wander off topic. Snapper lawnmowers used to be sold in Walmart briefly, and they pulled them out of Walmart because they decided that even though they could make more money there, it wasn't the appropriate brand projection that they wanted. They wanted a more elite exclusive brand image around that. And so, yeah, they could have made truckloads more money dumping their stuff into Walmart, but they decided that that wasn't the direction that they wanted to go. And they were willing to forego the cash in order to maintain a certain aura around who they are and what they do. So they walked away from some dollars as a business decision. So there are businesses that have said, yeah, we could cash a bigger check over in that direction, but we are choosing not to for whatever reasons, right? There's all kinds of reasons. Some of them are brand snobbishness. Some of them are moral or ethical. Some of them are logistical. There are times when businesses walk away from bigger money. It's happened. It doesn't happen often. And usually they've got a pretty clear way to articulate why they would. And I think in this case, going back to the interview that you were mentioning, Jim, GMT has clearly articulated why they are walking toward the cash, right? And I think that's part of what may have some of the wargamers concerned is I don't know of any person who's been in the wargaming hobby for more than 5 or 10 years that hasn't had to have the weird conversation with somebody that thinks that because we like war games, we're somehow warmongers or secret, you know, blood and guts fetishists or something like that. And we've had to have that conversation. And so now if GMT is going to make this hard pivot to selling to the mass public and focusing on Thunder Alley and Twilight Struggle and Mystery Wizard, is anything less abstract than the coin game suddenly going to be too uncomfortable for the larger public? And is that first, you know, those guys put Nazis in their games boycott going to cost GMT enough money that they're going to say, screw this wargaming thing? And I think that's what's got people scared. That That is the very definition of the logical fallacy of the slippery slope. I got it, right? I used to teach this stuff. I know. I know exactly what I'm doing right now.
Right.
But that's the mindset that some of these people had expressing their concerns online.
Yeah, that's fine. But that, to me, that's totally insane that you should be afraid of what some business is going to do. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
If they suddenly stop selling war games, my world doesn't collapse.
Correct.
No, you're busy doing that in your lab.
Well, yeah, but yeah, we're sucking it inside out. But like, there's enough games out there on the planet, enough companies making games. If GMT disappeared tomorrow and never made another war game in the world, I think we'd be fine. And I don't think the hobby would be hurt at all.
But I think the hobby would be hurt in the short term, but in the long term, your point's taken.
Yeah, Compass Games is doing a happy dance.
No, because like you say, the library is already too big for any of us to play.
Listen, I had to actually put a brake on myself from buying games because I just can't play them fast enough at the rate that they're coming out.
Right.
We're
absolutely living in this, I've described it, and I believe it's true, we're living in this crazy golden age of tabletop gaming.
Yeah, Vance, you're fired. If you've stopped buying games, you're out of here, dude.
But here's the thing about it, and that takes me to the sort of my next point, which is now that companies like GMT are pivoting out as opposed to pivoting in, and a lot of people have participated in that, the New York Times article said that has come with a higher level of scrutiny than war gamers have ever had.
I don't know about ever.
I don't think so.
I don't think there's been, remember, because the board gaming community has never been this big.
But I think that's what it is. The number of board gamers has brought the focus onto board gaming.
Correct.
Like never before. Not just board gaming. We're getting caught up in the board
This rising tide is lifting our boat. Yeah. And as companies like GMT and, well, look, the biggest example is Academy Games, right?
Yes, yeah.
You know, they haven't released a straight war game in a long time, okay? And no, the 1775 series, they're very, very fun games. I love them. They're not war games. They're just not.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, and like I've said before, that doesn't mean anything to me. That doesn't mean they're any less as a game or you shouldn't play them. But I just don't think they're war games. But as they've done this, as they've turned it out, and as they've hit this market, and as they're suddenly identifiable to this massive new media that surrounds board gaming, a few little games are leaking into this broader sphere that never would have been seen before. Not at this level. And the one that the New York Times article deserves credit for pointing out was the whole kerfluffle over King Philip's War.
I remember when that happened 11, 12 years ago.
And it is this sort of thing that I am most concerned about. This is the heart of my concern with this. This guy was, and they give the name, he's a professor, Julian Jennings. That's the critic. John Paniski is the designer.
Yep.
John Paniski is the designer of this game. He's a middle school social studies teacher who designed a game about a war that he just felt hadn't been studied. And it's a traditional classic war game that I happen to own. And he got told by self-righteous, I think way not over themselves individuals, this is my view, that he had no right to design this game. And I cannot tell you how much I disagree with that position. And how I will always fight it. I don't care who you are. You don't own history, yours or mine.
Well, so I remember when that one happened, and one of the criticisms that quite frankly was a legitimate criticism of the game was the characterization of the game as being part of the marketing and box copy was an important historical event in the history of our Puritan ancestors. which is pretty narrowly focused and sort of New England Yankee exclusionary there. And one of the legitimate complaints was from some of the descendants of the Indian tribes that were on the other side of that war that said, wait a minute, those aren't our Puritan ancestors. You know, you're being really one-sided in your marketing presentation of this game, which was a valid and legitimate criticism there. Now, that's certainly not the only criticism of the game. There were some that really were pretty flaky. There were some not particularly good criticisms of the game. But the ones that came from the descendants of the Indian tribes did have a point in some of the way that the game was portrayed. And to his credit, Panisky went back and said, all right, we need to relook at some of these things. And they did make some adjustments to the game as a result. Because I remember when all that happened. So there are times when there are some valid criticisms that at first blush might be, you know, maybe somebody's just being a bit of a rabble-rouser here, but, you know, you've got people descended from folks on both sides of the conflict. So, you know.
I mean, but here's a quote from one of the individuals protesting the game at the time. This is a contemporary article.
Yeah.
From what I've seen right now, this is totally inappropriate, highly inoffensive, nowhere near ready for production. It's just a way to have fun reliving a tragedy. That is a fundamental misunderstanding of wargaming that has pursued us, as you say, at least in my case, since the 80s, and I'm sure it was in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And I will not subject my opinions and my research to the opinions of people who don't know what they're talking about. You know, the fact that you think it is something that it isn't, that you haven't bought, that you haven't played, that's on you.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, that's your problem, not mine.
Yeah,
and, you know, the idea that you get to claim history or shape it a certain way, or that it can only be told a certain way. Look, every piece of history judges, right? Every game judges. When we, you know, we got together and played over the weekend one of the simplest quad games ever done. Well, it judges the capacity of the Spanish and the capacity of the Swedes at the Battle of Lützen. It says they were slow and they were fast. Well, if I'm an imperialist descendant, and I, you know, I don't know what my ancestry is, I'm adopted, but if I say that you have misrepresented my history, I demand you not release this game, where's that line and who decides what it is? And if you're going to tell me that it's going to be up for a company to determine whether or not it wants to release a game, okay, that's a business, fine. But nobody... You know, you don't get to tell me that what I'm doing is inappropriate because you disagree with the history or because you tell me I'm having fun with suffering. That's a manifestly false statement.
Yeah, I think anyone who seeks to criticize wargaming as somehow a glorification of violence or somehow engendering warmongering doesn't understand the hobby, and it's not that they need to be dismissed out of hand and, you know, cloak split in two and cast out into the rain or anything like that. They're simply in need of an education is really what it comes down to. Those are folks that need a better understanding of what it is we do. And that...
But a lot of them don't want that education.
Well, that might be. Now, I can't make you think, right? I can provide opportunities for you to think. And I can provide opportunities for clarity and understanding, but I can't force you into clarity and understanding. It's kind of antithetical to that whole free will sort of thing. But those folks I can kind of work with because you don't understand. And if you choose not to understand, at that point I'm just going to dismiss you because you're willfully walking away from knowledge and, you know, that's just a bad idea all around. To your point, Jim, the folks that are saying that this is somehow offensive for content or context reasons, I think those are the ones that you're more likely to flip the bird at, right?
I mean, here's the thing. I still want to know, and nobody will answer this to my satisfaction. Anybody that starts talking to me about, and it's not censorship, that's what government does, and I understand we are not talking about censorship. But when you start saying, well, this company ought to be more respectful, or this company ought to be more sympathetic, or this company ought to portray this in a better way. Okay, according to whose standards and who decides? Or according to which set of standards and who decides?
Yeah.
And if that standard, again, is a company getting down with, you know, sitting with some people and having a conversation and doing those things and having a healthy back and forth about history and all those other things, terrific. That's great. That's what they're doing. I have no problems. I walk away. But we leave that deliberately vague, and I'll tell you why, because we don't know how to answer it yet. And that goes to something that Cole Worley, who I love, I've met Cole. He is an incredible designer. He has designed two brilliant games. They're as close to war games as I think a Euro game can be, in John Company and Pax Premier, which are both, you should buy them and play them. You just should.
Wasn't he the guy that designed Root?
Yep, he designed Root as well. And he says something in this New York Times article that I just went, this is a really smart guy. And he says, you can make a game about anything, but you have to be responsible for the things you make. To whom? To whom?
Well, ultimately, to yourself, because the question is, 20 years from now, when somebody says, hey, you made this? Are you going to shrug and sheepishly go, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking at the time? Or are you going to go, hell yeah, you got a problem with it? So, I mean, at some point, you owe a bit of a responsibility to yourself.
Absolutely. But I think that's true. Yeah. But that's true if the rule book is junk. That's true if the map is junk. That's true if the counters are poorly put together. If they're mispunched. You know, Compass Games should have been responsible to itself for a number of games it's put out and it wasn't. Cheap shot. But
they lost their direction.
Back old school, you know, my beloved Wellington's Victory has horrendously mispunched counters. They should have been responsible for that too. I'll stipulate to that. If that's to whom, yes, you should be responsible for yourself. You should be proud of the games you made. But to who else do I, to whom, to what other group do I owe that debt?
Yeah.
I wish you to name them.
Well, this is where I'm going to go back to one of the points that I made on the previous podcast that I think still holds true, and nobody's convinced me that I'm wrong yet. I think we all, in the back of our mind, understand that somewhere out there is a line that we're not willing to cross. And some of those lines seem a little obvious, some of them probably not, but in the back of our mind, we all have a line out there that we're not willing to cross.
Can I ask you, I just want to understand your point. A line that we're not willing to cross in terms of a game we would design?
Or play. But there's a topic out there we're not going to touch. We're not going to build a board game on competitive rape in Darfur. We're not. Right? Find me the asshole who is so I know to never talk to that guy for the rest of my life. Okay? We're not.
But that's a personal decision, and you shouldn't force your opinion on him.
But that's where I'm going with this, Vance. That's where I'm going. We all have a line.
Yeah.
Our lines are not in the same place.
Correct.
Right? Our lines are not in the same place. Moreover, and this is something that I've dealt with in classrooms before, and this is something that I think a lot of people have a hard time with. This gets back to our what's the definition of a war game kind of argument.
Mm-hmm.
Center mass of the target, we're all fairly comfortable with. What is a war game? We're all going to look at Advanced Squad Leader and go, yeah, that's a war game, right?
Yep.
Hexes, counters, mathematical factors. Like, there's clearly all of the hallmarks that belong in a quintessential war game right there in ASL. We got it. The further from that center mass you get, the fuzzier the line gets. The argument that I use in the classroom is always talking about how do you define the media, right? Newspapers, television, radio, got it. Are greeting cards part of the media? Right? The further you get from center mass, the fuzzier the line gets. The further away from that line you get, the fuzzier, the more gray those discussions start to get. And lots of folks want those clear, hard, bright lines. Not to pick on you, Jim, but governments like have to put those clear, hard, bright lines in place when they're dealing with the law, because at some point some cop's got to write a ticket for somebody that says you broke this law in this way. Here's the rule. Here's what you did wrong. Like you've got to be able to draw some bright lines there. That doesn't always work with moral decisions, with personal decisions, with your own ethics. We all have a line. It's in a different place for everyone. And the further you get from a clear line, the fuzzier it starts to get. And the challenge, I think, ultimately comes into what you went back to, Jim. Who gets to decide? At what point am I foisting my line on you and forcing you to respect my line? And that's ultimately what I think a lot of this comes down to is as you said, who decides? Who should decide? GMT's trying to run a business, so at some point they may abdicate some of their decision making to their customers. If the customers are going to revolt and say, hey, I'm not buying that game, and if you make it, I'm never buying another game from you, and enough other people say that, GMT doesn't make that game. We're using GMT as a proxy for anybody else, obviously, but GMT happened to be the one in the news this year.
Well, but I also think that they're in I don't know if it's unique, but a fairly unusual situation of being a company that is beloved of the hardcore wargaming community, but has also had very significant success in the broader market.
And the rest, yeah. And maybe the only other one that's even close to that kind of position would be Academy. Because they while they are not as wargame heavy as they were, their wargames were still fairly well regarded, and they are branching out well beyond just the wargaming world.
Well, and they pretty much started with, you know, a bread and butter war game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Counters, tanks, infantry units driving across the map.
Yeah,
like that's how they started.
And
they've almost completely drifted away from that.
Yeah, and they chased the dollars.
Yeah,
and
of course,
you know, fair play to them. They're doing fine.
But I still hear people whining about that. Why doesn't Academy make any good war games anymore? Well, because they don't want to. It's their business.
Yeah.
Don't whine about it. It makes no sense to – that's what I don't understand. It makes no sense to me to complain about something you have no control over and somebody else's business.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an issue. But Jim, when you start asking, like, who gets to decide who should make a call, there's – you know, we've all got to make the call for ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
The question is, at what point – do we try to make that call for someone else? And I think a lot of the reaction that folks had to what happened with GMT was being concerned with who was going to make that decision for them, but also the idea that folks that were otherwise in no way invested in our community were trying to force some sort of external standards onto our community. And I think that was part of the concern as well, is, well, if you don't understand war games, you're going to freak out over the first time somebody's got to play the SS because we need somebody to play the other side. Otherwise, every World War II game is a solo game.
Particularly when I don't know what the standard is.
Yeah.
You know, I still don't know. Again, I do not want to defend Scramble for Africa. I won't do it.
No, it's not a defensible game. It's just
I don't care. Yeah. I just don't care. But I do observe in passing that it was put down to a merciful death based on a standard that, other than the fact that GMT may have made a bottom line decision, say this just isn't worth our time and effort and money, to Vance's earlier point. If that was the decision, you know, and if they said, look, we've got this public upsetness, we've got a game that was never going to make us a lot of money, it was struggling on the P500, and we're just going to put a merciful round in its temple, great, whatever. That's fine by me. I do wonder, as people look at the broader wargame community, look, we can all tell our little anecdote of the time, for me it was in high school, when teachers saw me playing U-Boat and were troubled by it.
Yeah.
Well, do you like war this much? Why do you like war that much? You know, I visit battlefields for my vacation and really, really like it.
Yeah.
And I'm not inclined to explain that to anyone. Well, you want to talk to me what I enjoy and how I, you know, that's fine. But I don't owe an explanation to people. And it's the same thing with word games. Why do I want to do a word game about the Battle of Wagram, which resulted in the death of 80,000 people?
Yeah.
I can give you a million reasons, but if you're inherently offended by the study of warfare at that level, I'm not going to be able to explain it to you.
Yeah. The what is entertaining is the experience that I had growing up was almost the exact opposite, and that's a function of the settings in which we grew up. I grew up on military bases. Right? There's nobody asking, you know, hey, you know, what's the deal with you playing these war-themed games? Because in the meantime, half the school's running around in camouflage pants. Right?
Now, see, that's funny because we got into war games in the 70s, and my father was in the armed forces, so I spent my entire childhood living on bases all across Canada. And when I first started getting into war games, my mom took my dad aside and told him that she was worried about me.
Huh.
Brilliant.
Yeah. See, I got into war games because my dad was a war gamer. I mean, you know, dad's my hero. I want to be like dad. You know, I mean, that was what got me started. You know, in the 70s, I was just a little tyke. I had no idea what I was doing. I was having fun with dad, you know, and then I realized, hey, I enjoy these things.
But if you want to know how deep my personal rabbit hole goes, my father was a conscientious objector in World War II.
Yeah.
You know how many of those guys there were?
Not a lot.
And he was a corpsman, but he still joined the Army and was a corpsman in the Pacific.
Yeah.
You know, all that Heartbreak Ridge, or the, what is it, Hacksaw Ridge stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I have no idea why these things appealed to me. None whatsoever. He never owned a gun, hated weapons, hated violence, all this other. I love this history stuff. I
didn't get it from him. It got me into it too, yeah.
I didn't get it from my mom. I just found it. So, and it goes also to game design. And again, you know, whereas I disagree strongly with, I'm very concerned about Cole Worley's comments about, you know, this responsibility thing. I actually agree with him, the point that we haven't yet evolved a proper way of, you know, it's well, look, there's so much of wargaming, even down to the components. We all had this conversation on the Armchair Dragoons website about Tom Vassell's absurd video unboxing of Brave Little Belgium, which nobody's allowed to see because he took it down in shame, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And in this unboxing, it was clear, and I did see it, it was clear that Tom just either willfully or ignorantly, I'll let him choose, is he frankly ignorant or is he stupid? I'll let him pick. He dismisses Brave Little Belgium because of the idiom of paper and shit war games. No, there aren't 1,000 little plastic monsters in there. No, you're not getting a box as big as a coffee table. No, the rules aren't slick, multicolor photographed things. No, you only get 2 little D6s. Because that's all you need to have one of these games.
Was Tom Vassell, I know YouTube wasn't a thing at the time, but was Tom Vassell writing and covering cheap-ass games at all back when they were a thing about 15 years ago?
I suspect not. I think he might still have been in Korea.
I'd be real curious to know what his opinion on some of those were.
You know, because they're all component whores. I understand that. That's fine. I like pieces. I like toys. Come on.
Yeah, the toy boxes are cool. Look, let's face it. That's why Fantasy Flight is in business, right? There's a couple of their games that are damn near unplayable, except like the twice a year that you and six friends.
Fantasy Flight was in business.
Well, yeah, but they're still in business. They got snarfed up by somebody else because of how successful they were. It's not like they went belly up because they crammed too many toys in their boxes. But the problem with Fantasy Flight is, you know, aside from the twice a year that Vance and his buddies go on their gaming retreat to the fishing cabin, you don't have the time to sit us, you know, David Heath from Lock and Load Publishing, they posted a photo on social media the other day of like six of them sitting around a table trying to play a full game of Twilight Imperium. I'm like, dude, the kids leave for college next week. You're never going to finish this.
You know? So my point on that is that, you know, he clearly just didn't understand the idiom.
Yeah.
You know, or again, willfully ignored it.
Yeah.
And so either way, it's like, you can't, You are clearly unequipped with that sort of an attitude to come in and judge anything about the hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not. I deeply dislike most Euro games. I cannot abide themeless games. I just don't have the time or the interest. I've liked a few. You know, I kind of liked Carcassonne for a while. But if I never play Settlers again, I'm fine. And we've gone around on this before. I forget in which context, but when I was in it was on the Saturday Night Fights. When I was in Regensburg, I was reminded that there is a board game on the family Thurn in Texas.
Yep.
That has a palace in Regensburg.
Yep.
And that game is about delivering the mail. So I
have you. Just quick question. Have you ever played it?
I've seen it set up. I've never played it.
So I have played it. It's not about delivering the mail. It's about collecting tiles from around the map. Your goal is to collect the tiles that represent your participation in those mail routes. But it's a tile collecting game where you're trying to collect match sets of tiles to get your score up. It could be about delivering the mail. It could be about, you know, picking up different kinds of fish in an aquarium. It could be all kind. You could put whatever the hell theme on it you wanted. The mechanics are essentially the same.
So my point is, I can't stand themeless games or those that wear their theme that poorly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because of that, I know I shouldn't be online writing reviews and judging the idiom. And judging the form. Similarly, if you really get war games that badly, so fundamentally wrong, what are you doing in the review space? You shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't do it. And that absolutely applies 100%. And I think, and this is where it gets right to my guts, the study of historical warfare. What do you think about the discipline of military history? Forget about whether you do it in a classroom setting. Forget about whether you do it in a war game. Forget about whether you do it watching a documentary. What do you think of the study of... Oh, and visiting battlefields. I have to say that too. Wherever you think about that, what do you think about it? If that's something you find morally questionable or that you don't get... You just can't understand what we're doing here. And I, you know, I thank you to keep your peace and go. And the fact that people presume to come in here and, you know, and I think there's a lot of that attitude that underlies some of those arguments. And I am shocked for, I guess, my coda on all this. I am shocked that at no point in this fairly lengthy article is there any mention of the panoply of hex encounter games that cover Victoria's Little Wars.
Yeah.
You want to get nuts? Let's talk about Victoria Cross 2. You want to get nuts? Let's talk about Soldiers of the Queen.
Yeah.
A Richard Byrd design. You know, let's talk about games like Remember Gordon, like, you know, there's many, many others of them.
Well, and that doesn't even mention all of the minis games out there that take place on those battlefields, in part because they are so vibrant and colorful and make a grand visual splash.
And because we have some of the greatest war movies of all time... that are written about them. You know, movies like Zulu, Zulu Dawn, The Four Feathers, the original, not the dumb one with Heath Ledger.
Okay, so the dumb one with Heath Ledger, if you don't treat it as a historical movie and you treat it just as kind of an adventure yarn, it's a good second cousin to the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies.
The only problem I will. Can we put a pin in the fact that you and I are going to have a fight about the Four Feathers at some point?
I didn't say it was better than the original. I said, don't compare it to the original. Treat it as an entirely separate genre, and it's not bad. It's a decent popcorn flick.
Then why call it the Four Feathers?
Well, look, I can't answer that part for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, what we have all these wonderful movies, all these incredible books that evoke the era, some of them quite well and some of them very poorly. And they created your right brand, and nobody here mentions my miniatures hobby, so we're going to keep quiet about that, too.
Oh, the hell we are.
But when you look at that, that's completely neglected and ignored, and I'm glad it is. Because to me, that's the thing where you really do start to ask yourself, are we making a good and proper study of this? You know, do we self-scrutinize enough? And that, to me, is where it all falls. And I think it's something you said, Brent. Ultimately, the individual has to make this decision as to whether or not this is appropriate. To me, my world winner on this, Vance, you're probably old enough. I don't know, Brant, are you old enough to remember Custer's Revenge?
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
Probably not.
This was an Atari 2600 game.
Yeah.
That was programmed, and it depicted... a little, and now you can all imagine what Atari 2600 graphics looked like.
Yeah. I mean, I had a 2600, I just don't remember the game.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, I'm just, you have to contextualize this way. Believe me, my point is, none of this was photo real.
or even close.
A member, notionally, I couldn't prove it to save my life, because you couldn't tell by looking at him, but a member of Custer's cavalry was killing Indians. And after he was done killing Native Americans, he set about the business of, yes, raping squaws. Raping Indian women. This, when I was in grade school, because I had 2600, was an immense scandal. Long before the internet, this was a problem. And you know what? You darn right it is. But I argued then, and I argue now, it would have crashed of its own stinking, rotten weight if we would have just ignored it.
Right. Don't give it so much free publicity.
Well, so let me ask you the question then, because that is something that's come up quite a bit, is if you ignore this, it goes away. If you ignore it, that one goes away. But if you ignore it and the next time somebody comes out with, instead of Custer's Revenge, it's Sitting Bull's Revenge, and now they're raiding, you know, Minneapolis and raping the settlers' women after all the men are killed. And somebody says, hey, that's not cool, you can't make that game. And that guy says, well, why not? All I did was reskin this other one that you didn't complain about. I mean, at some point...
You should give that one any attention.
Yeah. You know... At some point,
there was a recent one about that. Wasn't there some postal, or there was some other?
Well, it wasn't recent. We're just old, so 20 years ago seems recent.
I get to tell one of my favorite Best Buy stories of all time. My brother, when he was younger, wanted postal more than anything in the world, and you know why? Because he had heard it was awesome, and it had people going postal. Killing people with scissors and guns and all this other stuff. I went to Best Buy and asked a blue shirt, hey, dude, you got postal? Yeah. Where's it? It's in the back. Can I have it? No, you don't want that game. Why not? That's a horrible game. Well, what do you mean it's horrible? It's got incredibly bad content. Nobody should buy it. And I went, and I snapped on the guy. I said, and this was inappropriate of me, I'm going to admit that in advance. I said, look, $8 an hour. Walk yourself into the back and get me a copy. Right now. You don't get to tell me what I will and will not buy that you have for sale. Who do you think you are? And I tend to react very badly to school marmism. You know? And, by the way, Postal is a really bad game.
But it's just a bad game.
It's junk.
Yeah.
And my brother wanted this junk more than a dozen really good games, like I think Age of Empires was out at the time.
But you'd be okay if Best Buy had decided not to sell it because it was a bad game. Or because they were...
Absolutely. Best Buy made the corporate decision, you can't have this game because we just don't want the hassle of dealing with it. It doesn't meet our standards. Corporate decision. I don't care.
Right. You go somewhere else.
Right, because somebody else is going to sell it to me, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
And can I flip this to sort of give a little salve to Brant? All right, we'll go again to see how old we are. Do you guys remember the Sega CD game Night Trap?
I tried actively to ignore video games around the time the Segas were out. Look, I'm an Atari Wave kid. I had an Atari 2600 at home. I don't remember Custer's Revenge, but I had a very early Wave 2600. Those were released 81, I think it was. So, I mean, we had one that within the first 12 months of them being released. By the time the Nintendos were out, the Nintendo Wave Generation X folks, my younger brother and younger than that, I give a rip. Like, I was trying hard to ignore video games at that point.
This was a game, this was one of the first games they released for the very exciting new technology of the CD.
Yeah.
And it featured Tracy Lords as a victim of vampires.
Was this before or after she came out about her age?
After.
Okay.
This was her attempt to have a career after all that.
Yeah, semi-legit.
Yeah, trying to
she had a career.
An actress.
A DJ, and she appeared in John Waters movies. And, you know, good luck to her, you know. But I actually, and it was ultra-violent, right? And it had a hard time getting into Walmart for the reasons we were, not probably Kmart at the time, for the reasons we stated. The businesses didn't want to deal with the hassle. By purest chance, I had dinner at my wife's boss's house, and he had also invited as a guest the guy who designed and produced Night Trap.
Cool.
And this guy was the most tedious jag I have ever had dinner with. And he was sitting there the whole night talking about how his game, which he was so pleased I knew about, was a defense of the First Amendment against the forces of tyranny.
Oh, good grief.
And I'm like, dude, I do not want anybody to ban your game ever. I want to be crystal clear. But spare me the idea that you are standing at the outer ramparts of freedom. You're peddling softcore violence porn.
Yep.
I want nothing to do with it. I never want to see it. I would never buy it. But I certainly don't want to ban it. I just don't think those are inconsistent thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a difference between I don't want to have it and I don't want you to have it. And I think a lot of people aren't real good at drawing that distinction.
Correct. I think that's where part of the problem is. Yeah.
And if you want to talk to me about your views on games and you've shown me you know what you're talking about and you want to engage in a conversation about history and about depiction and about all this other stuff, great. Let's do that. That's exciting. I would love it if more people cared about talking about history. But if all you've got is postmodern grievance and you're trying to foist that into a space where it really doesn't work, then I don't have that much time in my day for you.
So
it all comes back to me. Who decides and what are your standards?
So because we are going to run short on time here, we're coming in a little less than an hour, which I realize is going to seem inadequate compared to the hour and 40 minutes or whatever it was that Rex and Matt and I covered. But we're trying to keep this within the bounds of normal podcastdom now that we're back in season here. I do want to ask a question because as I mentioned earlier, we've all got lines and they're all in different places. Is there a point at which you see yourself attempting to enforce some form of your line on someone else? And before you say no, if some dude had walked up to our booth at Origins in full SS costume regalia and wanted to sit down and play the SS and was making anti-Semitic remarks while dicing around a World War II war game, we'd have kicked his ass out of there. Right? Don't tell me we wouldn't have. We absolutely would have. The line at which I don't want to participate and the line at which I'm probably going to enforce something on someone else, they're probably in different places, but they probably do exist. Now, again, I'm deliberately using an extreme example.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with the example.
Yeah. Everybody goes to the extreme because
it's the fallacy of reduction to the absurd, right?
Yes.
But look, I'll cop to this. I used to work at the Renaissance Fair. We went in Renaissance Fair garb to a reenactment fest here in Illinois. And I was with a friend of mine who was portraying the jester to the queen. And I also knew, just because she is a friend and has been for many years, that she is a Jew. And there are people there in the full Waffen SS regalia. And I stared at him for about an hour doing my bit. And I said, I walked up to the head guy and I said, look, you're probably not the first one that's ever told you this. I don't know if it's even my place. But I got no beef you play in the Wehrmacht. I got no beef you play in the 21st Panzer Division. But this right here has given me a bad case of the creeps. And I walked away. So, to me, the real point is, if I'm sitting now, and you're talking about two different things, right? What I'll put up when I'm playing a game and what I want in the design of a game. Do I want the SS in my, do I want SS Panzer units in my game on the Eastern Front? I think you kind of got to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a historical justification for having them there.
Yeah.
Right? There's an actual purpose. We can go to the historical record and say these guys were present. They should be in the game.
But I don't care who you are. If you are rude in a booth that I'm responsible for or I'm in, if you're rude, I'm going to ask you to leave.
Yeah.
I don't care if your rudeness is expressed by exorbitant flatulence, grabbing the backsides of men and women, or wearing a Waffen SS uniform and heiling Hitler and insisting, I'm going to kick out on all three bases and have no conscience about doing any of it. Because, I'm not here. I'm not living your life. I'm not your judge. But you're not doing that around me.
Yeah.
But that's rudeness.
Yeah, that's an ignoramus, yeah.
Yeah, that's not game design.
Yeah.
That's not... And so if, some, on the other hand, somebody sits down and says, I want to do this game in which we, and I've tried to think of the real good edge cases, because a Holocaust simulator, that's weird. Everybody feels like that, but where's my line? I think probably anything that actually, now, and again, this is me saying what I wouldn't play as opposed to what I wouldn't tolerate. There's almost nothing I can think of that I wouldn't tolerate being designed. I would just review it very harshly and then choose not to buy it.
We may have to sort of cease discussion at this point. I want to say I'm attributing the quote to Heinlein, although potentially inaccurately. The conclusion is the place where you sort of got tired of thinking. and I think that may be where we are at this point. I'm hoping that we are now done discussing GMT's Scramble for Africa, and that if we come up against the whole idea of public controversy over the wargaming hobby, at least we've got a different game to talk about when it comes around.
I think the next frontier, and we're all going to watch it with great interest, is whether or not, because I can see this, and that's why I've posted to my Twitter that it's in my profile, there's this desire to eschew the name wargame.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
This is part of the big thing. That's the next thing. I don't think it'll be a game, but it's as really smart guys, really good designers run scared from that word and try to come up with something else. I'm just going to sit over here and insist you're playing a war game.
Yeah,
that's what you're doing. Grow up.
Well, and part of the challenge with that, again, even Dunnigan said it. 35 years ago. The problem with war game is the words war and game, and let's instead call it a conflict simulation, except that not all conflicts are wars and not all games are simulations. And if you start, you know, those words have deliberate meanings for a reason, and it's not simply grab the thesaurus and start replacing them with synonyms like you're trying to cram new vocabulary into an eighth grade term paper. That's not what we're doing, right? We've got words of precision for a reason. So
everybody knows what we're talking about, and if we're afraid of it, then we should ask ourselves why.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, good chat.
good talk, people. Good talk.
So this this is going to wrap up this episode of Mentioned in Dispatches, the start of season 3 here. Please come back and join us with the podcast. I'm hoping that by the time we start getting partway into season 3 that we're actually on iTunes, but we do have the RSS feed noted on our site now that you can always just plug that feed into iTunes to get the subscription, and you're good to go there. For those of you that use iTunes for whatever other podcast software you're using, the RSS feed should get you the subscription to the podcast. Vance, thank you. Appreciate it. Jim, thank you. You know.
Anytime.
It's what's nice about doing podcasts with Wargamers is even if you disagree with folks, they're at least articulate enough that you're okay listening to them. And so that is one of the nice things about the podcast. Look, when we don't have Mirth on here being drunk, right? But which I have a feeling is next episode. It is nice to at least be able to articulate what it is that we're discussing in an educated way. And so that's always enjoyable. So thank you guys. And, you'll be hearing a bunch more from both Jim and Vance as season 3 rolls on. And as always, swing by the Armchair Dragoons, take a poke around our forums. We'd love to have some more Wargamers talking war games in there. So we're not just kvetching about the latest Marvel movies. We would love to have more folks playing war games, and stop by and check out Jim's Saturday Night Fights some evening over on YouTube. And we're going to have a podcast episode devoted exclusively to talking about Saturday Night Fights coming up later in this season. That's a tease, folks. That's a tease.
Great.
Vance, thank you and good night. Jim?
Good night.
Thank you and good night.
Good night, everybody.